everybody. Welcome back to the Ones Ready podcast. I'm going to keep doing this and surprising you guys. I did it with Aaron last time we chatted, and I'm going to keep doing it with you just because it throws you guys off. But basically, because I didn't want to, you know, leave content out there since you're sitting here chatting and telling me about all the amazing ideas that you have to fix officers, not just fix officers, but because we don't really need to fix officers. What we're talking about here, though. Well, okay, but for all my officer friends out there, got it. We love you. Yeah. Trent doesn't, but yeah. So what were you saying? You were talking about how we can, it's not officer accessions, right?
It's the way that people join the Air Force. Like, okay. You know, like the old 18 X-ray program.
Mm-hmm.
So like that was okay. But like, it's not the way that, you know, Green Berets have always brought people into the fold, right? And like, I don't know, I look at things and I'm just like, one of the reasons they do that is they want people to get Army experience before they come in, right? Like, traditionally, to be a Green Beret, you have to be an E5 in the Army before you can cross over. And in theory, these people already know a bunch about the Army. You don't have to teach them about the Army. Like, you save a whole bunch of time and money, blah blah blah. And in today's environment, and you know me, I'm an efficiency guy, and it doesn't mean it always work, but I look around and I see how much money the government is spending on like service academies, how much money we're spending on officer recruiting and all of these other things. And I think that there's a solution where we could just make it simpler. You know, I'm a simple person. I think if we brought in everybody enlisted first and then kind of through that vetting process and people actually learning how to do their jobs and learning about the Air Force, had opportunities to become warrant officers and officers after that, I think things would be a lot better is the basic gist of what I think.
No, and I think that's we've probably chatted about that before, and I know it's probably been floated. You're not necessarily talking about a conscription type thing. It's just that, hey, if you're going to end up serving in the military, I'm definitely not talking about conscription. But if you're going to join the military anyway, then maybe coming in enlisted just to get more perspective. But you know, the 18 X-ray program, for those that aren't familiar with what that is, that's the Green Beret program where 18 series, as in like, you know, 18 Alpha Fitness, 18 Alpha, he was a captain, or actually, I don't know what he retired as, but he was an officer on a Green Beret officer. Anyway, so, and it used to be that you had to come in, be big Army, do whatever, you know, whether it was, you know, 11 Bravo or whatever, and then you would have to then become or assess and select for Green Beret. The Navy SEALs did the same exact thing for a while. They were doing, you had to go be a corpsman or whatever it was first, and then go to buds and that kind of stuff. Whereas we have always been, you could go straight in. When the height of Afghanistan and Iraq, they ended up changing our program because they were hurting on manning, and then started the 18 X-ray program, which then you could come in right off the street. So that's what that whole program is. That was troublesome at first, at least according to the older Green Beret dudes.
Yeah.
But I'm sure it was also, you know, that whole, well, this generation just doesn't get it. And I'm sure there was a lot of that too.
Well, there was, you're an E5 so fast because you can't, per the whatever the rules, you can't be a Green Beret. You can't be on an ODA if you're not a sergeant, right? So you have these dudes that, granted, they went through like whatever, how many years of training, like 2 years of training to get there, depending on what they are, right? And then you show up, they automatically become an NCO. And it's just like, that's really quick. And I, a lot of the times I feel the same way about like the lieutenants, you know, like they show up. And it's like, yo, like that was quick. And now you want me to listen to you or whatever. It's just a lot of responsibility early on. So I think there's nothing wrong with seasoning people, you know? And so I could just go through my plan right now so you can.
Yeah, go through it. Let's pick it apart.
Everybody joins us enlisted. All right. So like we save a whole bunch of time with a lot of the ROTC programs where people don't actually end up in the military and the service academies and all that other stuff. So everybody comes enlisted at the 4 to 6 year mark. People should become warrant officers. And you might say, Trent, we don't have warrant officers right now. And I go, I know that's true, but people should become experts in their job before they do become experts in leadership, is my opinion. All right. At the 10-year mark, around that time, so you've been in the military for 10 years, that's when you can go up for officer selection, right? And then also, I think lieutenants is kind of a dumb rank. So if you make it through officer selection, and maybe there's like 2 years of schooling that you have to do, or certain educational requirements. I know people are real big on the civilian education stuff. So you could work that out. But you come in as a captain, really. We just get rid of lieutenants. At 10 years, you come in as a captain. You should only have to be a captain for like 2 years of that at that point, really. And that's like your last like vetting process, right? Coming as a captain to lead, you're still doing the job a little bit. It's like your transition into management, right? And just because you become a warrant officer, by the way, at that the 4 to 6 year mark, doesn't mean you have to become an officer after that. Like, these are all optional. I'm not saying you have to do any of these things. And then my other piece of this is the enlisted ranks should end at E7, like your senior enlisted. And there's a few different ways to do that, but I think the pay structure, some of the money that you could save through all this, you could pay your E5s and above more money, since you're calling them non-commissioned officers, and in theory they know everything about the job and they're doing the job and also leading airmen. And then at E7, you could do something like the pay scale is based on years in rank. You know what I mean? And then we get rid of all this chief stuff. No offense to chiefs, but like, it gets really complicated. Like, your E8s and E9s, right? Like what's the difference between your 8s and 9s and your officers, besides the fact that they actually have experience doing the job?
Not much, because you have seniors or E8s that can be in the same positions as a chief.
Right. And then we have these chiefs, and then like the chief thing has gotten way complicated and bloated, in my opinion. Like, we have the chiefs group that like manages only chiefs. Like, they're like this special breed of enlisted person. And then you have like your squadron chiefs, your group chiefs, your command chiefs, certain levels of, you know, like all the way up to like the chief master. Like, we'll just have senior enlisted folks, okay? Like, if you're an old crusty E7, you've been in 18 years, everybody gets it. You're an old crusty E7, and you get put in the positions. But this whole, like, additional ranking structure of chiefs, like, the politics of it is just ridiculous and a waste of time and resources. So, so that's my plan. There you go, Air Force. You're welcome.
So, you fixed ANS, and now you're fixing... Yeah. Okay.
I don't know. After my last phone call with the group commander, I'm not sure that they're down with my fixes for ANS. Yeah.
Did somebody shake their finger at you?
No, actually. We have some things coming up. It was actually a very productive conversation, and more to come, so that we can, you know, work together to see what we can do.
Good.
From our side on their side.
No, that's good. I'm track of the conversation. I know it went well. Yeah. Yeah, so there is definitely some politics involved, at least with the E8 and E9 thing, and especially when you start talking about your group to wing command chief, you know, that is definitely political. Dealing with now, actually. I am, anyway.
Fun.
And I'm not very political, so, you know, there we go.
Yeah.
I may not be your guy.
Right.
But no, I agree with the no lieutenants, you know, because it doesn't make sense. So for a second lieutenant, it's you're usually that, and I could get it wrong, and there's no definitive answer because there are different variables involved in that. But usually for a second lieutenant, you're in that position for 1 to 2 years. Then a first lieutenant, you're in there for 3 to 4 years. And then a captain, you're usually 5 to 10, I believe.
I think it's 2 years per lieutenant rank, right? I think those are automatics, because you get promoted to captain basically automatically at your 4 year mark.
Yeah, they're automatic, and same with major.
Yeah, well, yeah, mostly.
You'll get, like I said, unless you get in trouble, you'll get major. So, but your workhorses of the officer corps are your kind of captains, and definitely your majors. Your majors are workhorses.
Yep.
And so I equate your captains to kind of staff sergeant, and your majors to a tech sergeant. Like, and I don't mean with responsibility and authorities. I'm talking about just your workhorses. A yep. tech sergeant is the workhorse, at least in special warfare. I was the most, as a tech sergeant, I was the most qualified, the most utilize the, I was just jobbing just constantly. I was jobbing the whole way through, but Tech Sergeant is really where I kind of peaked. And, yep. And man, it was everything, every deployment, every TDY, every training event, everything as a Tech Sergeant, I was taken.
Yeah. Well, we always talk about that, right? Like we tend to get guys to peak lethality, peak knowledge, and then they make E7 and it's like, hey, you're coming to ops. That's like, yeah. It's good to get a break, but like you never, you feel like you lose something, a little bit of something. You see the guys that try to stay E6 for as long as possible, but they end up just being team sergeants anyway, because you can't maintain that. You know, like if you're a worker and people like you and, you know, like all these other things, it's like, well, you're the team sergeant. It's like, I'm not an E7. They're like, I don't
care.
Yeah.
Well, so that's, boy, we're going to get off on a tangent here, but
yeah,
who's running a team at that point, right? Is it the tech sergeant or is it the mass sergeant, right? The team sergeant is okay positional wise, but maybe he just got to the unit and he doesn't have the pool. Cause I tell you what, if you're a solid dude and you have the personality and the credibility to get everybody on your page or your side or whatever you want, like you're the one running the team.
Yep.
Not the teams aren't.
Well, it's just like, you know, the teams have like wavelengths, right? And there's, you can walk onto a team and like, if you're not on the same wavelength as like the senior E6 as an E7, right? And you're asked to like, you're the team sergeant. Like that's why, like, I always tell people, like, you should just ease into it, chill into it, you know, like figure out what's going on. Cause if you come in with these bright, big ideas, and this goes for officers and enlisted, right?
Mm-hmm.
You see these guys come in and they're a totally different wavelength and they just like, they're like, everybody needs to be this tomorrow. And I was just like, that doesn't make any sense. That's not what we do. And then they're all looking at that E6 and he's just like, I'll take care of this. Like, yeah. And then, you know, then you have that friction.
Yeah. But it's good friction. It's,
yeah.
Because it needs to happen. And it's not to say that team sergeant's not running the team. Obviously there's a difference between, you know, influential leadership and positional power and all that kind of stuff. So it's just a different kind of thing, but man, you get a solid tech sergeant that is fully qualified and is an unbelievable operator and can speak at a different level. That dude is your shining star in an entire unit.
Yeah.
And
yeah, they make everything happen.
Yeah. Yeah. So again, going back to the workhorses, that's your tech sergeant, staff sergeant, tech sergeant. That's your captain and majors. Now, at certain points of like a staff job or something like that, then your lieutenant colonels, your O5s and your kind of E7s, E8s are also workhorses, but that is at a staff or a major command or a headquarters level.
Yeah, we have way too much staff for everything.
Ooh. I might push back on that one a little bit.
All right.
And the reason why... And I'm not necessarily disagreeing. I'm just saying that where I'm at, we get a lot of stuff pushed down from Air Combat Command mm-hmm. onto us to do when it's really things that the staff at the headquarters should be doing, but they don't have the manning. I mean, when people think that when, you know, okay, just using Air Combat Command or using AFSOC, Air Force Special Operations Command as a, people think, all right, the staff, it's got to be, you know, 400 people. No, the staff at a wing, at a headquarters is probably 100 or less. That's at a headquarters. At a wing, the 2-4 SAO, I think it's a handful of people.
Yeah, wings are supposed to be small.
Right, but at least right now, the new construct that's coming out, things are going to change. Same with the MAGCOM.
Well, I'm a believer in most of that, right? Like you saw how like the Space Force, the nerds looked at everything and yeah, they're nerds and nobody likes you, but they got rid of wings or they got rid of groups. One of them, right? They're just like, A, yeah, we don't have the manpower to do it. B, it's not really necessary to get the job done, you know?
Well, Space Force has Spocks and I'm not even kidding. If you haven't looked at the Space Force stuff too,
and
hey, we've got a Space Force unit at the web school. And in fact, Yeah, some of them listen to this too, which is funny because they're going like, "God, picking on us." But yeah, they've got Deltas, they've got Spocks, they've got a whole different, tiered system in terms of their command relations and organization. So yeah. they went all in on the Star Trek thing.
Yeah, but yeah, they're nerds, and I love it. I actually do like, but what happened is they had the opportunity, and I get it that they still get a lot of support. They still fall under the Department of the Air Force, right? So they still get a lot of support and all that other stuff through falling under the DAF. However, when they looked at the organizational structure and how ineffective it can be, the way that the Air Force is set up now because of traditions and like the way things were at one point in time, you know, and you hold on to things, you know, they reorged it to make it make more sense. Right. And I think we have a hard time with that. Like, right. Even with like our career fields, everybody's like, "Oh my goodness, we're losing TACPs." And it's like, okay, but look at TACPs before GWAT. There were way fewer TACPs because it wasn't a requirement. We weren't fighting, you know, two land wars at the same time. So we didn't need as many TACPs. And so like, it's hard for us sometimes to like, look at things and be like they're cutting down my career field. Like we're losing all these positions. And it's like, well, did you really think that we were going to hold on to all these positions when we're not actively engaged in multiple theaters of combat?
Yeah. And that's a natural ebb and flow of the military. We surge when we need to, and then we divest when we can and when we need to. The weird thing right now the Air Force is going through is everybody's talking about this recruiting crisis and it's a sinking ship. Reality, it's not. Believe me, it's not. What the recruiting crisis is that there are certain career fields that aren't getting the manning and the recruits that they need, where there are other career fields that are 200% manned.
Right.
Like, so we're not balanced right now. And that's what we're trying to, that's the concern. And that's what we're trying to do.
Well, there's differences. Like missing recruiting goals does not necessarily mean that the Air Force is unhealthy, right? Like to my earlier point, like, it's like, do we really need all these people? Like, why were all these people joining? Like when I joined in 2003, like you had to basically try out to get into the Air Force, you know, because the Air Force was not struggling with recruiting because of all the stuff that was going on in the world. And, you know, so like, why are people not joining now? Well, we don't have an actual war that's on the news, you know? And then there's political stuff and a bunch of the other stuff that like makes more noise than all that. But the fact of the matter is a lot of people join because they want to be a part of something. They want to be a part of something that they can tell their kids about, you know, like they want to either shoot somebody or say that they knew a bunch of people that shot somebody or dropped bombs or whatever. So like, that's just
Americans
the way it is.
Like to fight.
Weird.
We'd like to fight.
Bunch of savages.
But I mean, look at the influx of people. You know, post 9/11, people were pissed off. So that made sense. I think probably everybody hit their recruiting goals for several years after that.
Yeah.
We like to fight. That's the way it is. Now, maybe we need to keep our noses out of other people's business for sure. I'm not advocating for we just fight everybody.
Like, world police.
Yeah. We don't need to be the world police. But if it makes sense and the public need, and notice I said public, not politicians, the public need us and want us to go, then sure.
Don't not get all constitutional on us. Don't refer to that old document about who holds the power.
It's just old. It's worthless.
Yeah. We're just the execution arm of the will of the, you know, the public through the representatives that they've elected to Congress. Right. So that's all it is.
That's all it is. I just don't know how it would work with the removal of E-89, because then at that point, so are we relying on the E-7s to do the care and feeding for the remaining, the ones that don't go over to officer? Because you're still going to have a large amount of enlisted, and they would also have to be only so that we don't get too top heavy. There would have to be only a certain percentage can go officer.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there'd be like an accession. There's a process, right? Like, it's not like, hey, I scored 13 on my ASVAB and I made it into the Air Force with a waiver, and like, I want to be an officer. Like, no offense to dumb people, but you know, it is what it is. Like, you have to. There's gonna be like wickets that you have to get past to become a warrant officer, and then to become an officer, just like in the Marine Corps, right? If you want to go from staff sergeant to a warrant officer, there's things you have to do. And then at a certain point in your warrant officer career, it's like, hey, do you want to become a lieutenant or do you want to stay on the warrant officer track? Like, these things are not impossible to do. But yeah, it's like you have to get selected. You have to put in paperwork. You have to do all these other things to get to that next level of whatever it is that you want to do. And so like, if you become a warrant officer and you become a pilot and you're like, hey, I don't want to become like an officer. I have no, you know, I hate people, but I love flying. It's like, hey, well, you can stay here. You can become a Whiskey 4 and you can be as crusty and fly as much as you want to. And that's really good. And that way we're not paying them, you know, more money than we need but that's where your experience lies, right? And then if some guys are, obviously we see this on the 160th too, it's like, no, like I want to lead this organization.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, yeah, like crossover, become an officer, but you already have 10 years experience. And so like, yeah, like you might have to do 30, 40 years to become a general. Like, good, good.
Okay. So I don't disagree. I think one of the unintended consequences of that is that oftentimes the people that we want to become leaders don't, because they're like, well, dude, I'm flying. I'm a tactical expert and I'm the best. I'm one of the best in my thing. I'm staying this. And on the other side of that is some of the people that become leaders are the people that we don't want. Because if you're looking for power and you're looking like it kind of, I'm always,
what's the difference between that and the way it is now? Sorry.
Which is valid, right? So if you, I don't think that everybody that becomes an officer wants to like, all right, I want to lead these folks. That's because I just don't think that there are that many anyway. There for sure are. I just don't think there are that many that are like, I want to lead people. Now, I do think at some point you, as you're going through, specifically with officers, I think there becomes a point, probably when you're a captain, a senior captain or a major, where you start seeing people that are in squadron commanders and you're like, man, this isn't great. Or man, this is great. And somebody inspires you to be, yeah, like, I want to be like that person. I want to command a squadron and I want to be like that person. Whereas others are like, dude, I know what that was like and I want no part of that. And there's no way I'd treat people that way. So I want to be a squadron commander so that I can try and influence change, the good kind of change. So there's righteous stuff in that. And I think that there are people like that. I always get wary though when we get some of the new DMs from people and they're like, I just want to lead people in combat. I'm like, there's so much more to it than leading people in combat. It's, man, I don't think you know, and that's fine because usually they're young, you know, they're at the academy or they're ROTC or maybe they're just high schoolers that are going to college and that's what they want to do. And I'm stoked that you want to serve your country, but I think you have got to find a different reason of like, I want to lead people. And to think that there's enlisted folks that aren't out there leading people. I mean, Air Force Special Warfare is predominantly enlisted. Those are the tacticians, not your officers. That's not to say that there aren't fantastic tactical experts in the officer career fields within Air Force Special Warfare, because there absolutely are. Ones that were not prior E's too. Yeah. So, you know, but you can't think that enlisted aren't leading people. Like, that's an insane thought.
You're always going to have crossover, right? Like, you're always going to have your like in my construct, like your E7s and your warrant officer 3s and your majors and lieutenant colonel, you know, like there's always like people are leading people. And the cynic in me though wants to be like, you know what I see a lot of the time is people will make like financial decisions and then end up being great officers, you know, like or maybe they don't have to be separate, right? Like if I want to retire at 25 years with more money, like, which is that's not a bad thing. It's like, well, I could stay a warrant officer, or because like I have a wife and kids or whatever, I would like to invest more money. I'm going to go the officer route and just, you know, ride out the last 10, 15 years and do it that way and end up with more money in my pocket. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. And, but like, you're going to see, you know, good leaders and bad leaders. It's the same on the enlisted. It would be the same with warrant officers. It's all the same. Like, people are people. And like, I don't care why you make the decision. I care what you do with the decision.
Yeah, that's valid. Now, I taking away the intent, well, not taking away the intent, but the initial intent anyway, if I want to lead people. Yeah.
I guess it sounds cringy.
It does sound cringy. The gap between enlisted and officers has never been closer. It really hasn't. That's not to say that, you know, a brand new A1C is operating at the level of a major. That's not what I'm saying. But the, you know, how often now are people coming in with college degrees with the same education level as a lieutenant that's coming out of the academy or coming out of ROTC? Like, a lot of these folks have already got degrees. Or if they're not and they're joining because their supervisors are pushing them to get education and constant self-improvement, within the first 4 years, they've got a degree. Their first 4 years in the Air Force, they've got a degree, a full-up bachelor's degree. So, you know, if that was the differentiating, the other difference is officers usually can articulate their words and not stumble over their words like I am. So
some.
So, geez, can't talk today.
It's early where you're at, you know, and it's raining. It's been rough.
It is spring break. I should probably use some Cardomax.
You should use some Cardomax.
Yeah.
Why would you use Cardomax? I don't understand.
Well, Cardomax has got two different things. Well, they've got a couple different things, actually. They've got your immune booster. Immune booster. They've got hydration and they've got caffeine. They got a whole bunch of caffeine. I actually, so I carry the little packets around with me, right? And me and Vice, who his episode just released, we were TDY and he was hurting. And I gave him a little packet and he hadn't had one before. And he got him on the go train, brother.
The Cardomax is so great that, like, I always feel like a drug dealer. Cause anytime someone's like, what is that? I'm like, oh, hey, here. Man. Like, and then I'm always like hitting up Sean being like, I need more. Cause like,
yeah.
Give away the stuff like candy. I'm a pusher, you know?
Yeah. Nice. Mean Girls reference. That's good. I dig it.
Is that a Mean Girls
a real
reference?
Pusher. It is.
It's like a
Tina Fey. Tina Fey, she got Lindsay Lohan called her a pusher in that little whatever book that was. Yeah. I know way too much about that, but wow. Hey, whatever. I've got two women in my house that love it. Love
I was referencing
movie.
Like 60s and 70s music about drug dealers being called pushers.
Yeah. Well, showing your age, I guess. Boom. Anyway, Cardomax.com, promo code One's Ready. Get yourself a discount. You can get some little packets to take with you when you travel.
And they're liquid. You know what? Like, some of the people that have introduced to it, they've used other things, especially on the hydration front. And they're like, A, this tastes way better. B, yeah. I just throw it in my water. Maybe give it a little shake if you're concerned about it. Boom. Instantaneous goodness to go. So you don't have to deal with the powders and all that other stuff. No offense, Hoist, but I prefer the liquids.
Ooh. Well, the ready to drink for Hoist are really good. Drinkhoist.com, promo code One's Ready for your hydration needs for ready to drinks and packets. And there we go.
We're so bougie with all of our options now. We're like, oh, like I have all these things that I could use for all these different.
We did.
Because I'm very specific about when I drink certain things. And yeah.
Well, I like hammering those things back first thing in the morning and then right before bed.
Oh, yeah.
Because those are the times that after waking up, I've spent a lot of time not drinking water. And then right before bed, I'm about to spend 8 hours not drinking. So
makes get sense. That magnesium before you go to sleep. Kids, it's fantastic.
Yeah. No, but going back to the enlisted officer thing, man, I think it would work. Actually, I think there would be some growing pains, as there is with everything. But I think that you could bring everybody in Air Force. Now, what would you do with the service academies?
Goodbye. Save millions upon millions of dollars and then take some of that money and put it into enlisted pay?
Oh, that's a good point. So as I was talking about in terms of the, you know, the gap between enlisted and officers has shrunk throughout the years. One thing that has not been revisited is the enlisted pay. And I know that Chief Master Sergeant of the Air Force Bass, and I believe some of the other service chiefs or service senior enlisted were working on this as well as the new SEAC, and CZ was working on it before him, but revisiting the pay charts for enlisted folks.
Yeah, we could get more oomph behind this if everybody came in enlisted in the front door. A, that process already exists. And then the process to like switch over to like warrant officer or officer, however you want to look at it, already exists. And ROTC programs already exist. All these things that if you wanted to use any of these things, which are fantastic, but to do this other service academy thing, and I get it that traditionally back in the day, and there's a lot of family histories with a few folks and all this other stuff, I get it that it'd be hard, but it's not worth the money. And you're going to have a hard time changing my mind that it's worth the money that the government spends on those places. Like, it's not like people come out of the Air Force Academy as pilots. Like, they don't run flight school. They don't do like we create pilots. Do you though? You know, like,
well, most of their recruitment for pilots comes out of the service academies, or at least right. The Air Force Academy.
Yeah. But like that's just known as the program, right? If you just get rid of the program, then those same people, instead of spending time in college and wasting their time and all these other things, they just start serving their country right away. And then there's a process to get there anyway. At 4 to 6 years, you can switch over to a warrant and you can start flying. Get through flight school, boom. Then you're a flyer. Like, it's just, and we get something out of it. And we already know these people and they're vetted and all this other, you know, like, and it's way cheaper, like a lot cheaper.
Yeah, it is cheaper. I mean, you never know. They may end up going that route. I mean, with West Point removing, you know, duty, honor, and country from their mission statement kind of thing.
So we just remove West Point. Bye. Like, I don't know what you guys are thinking, removing that stuff.
It is a weird thing, and I'd love to hear the rationale behind it, because I have yet to see any kind of statement get put out about that. And it's a weird thing when you start talking about serving your country and i.e. country. Like I said, they removed duty, honor, and country from it.
Like, that's weird.
They just seem really, really strange when you're supposed to espouse service and duty and honor and country and integrity and service and all that kind of stuff.
Did they replace it with anything? Because, like, to be fair, I only saw like the now comes the other side of Trent, right? Like, I only saw like the headlines of some of these things. I didn't do a lot of research on it. Did they replace it with something else?
Not that I saw. I did not see anything in terms of what they're replacing with. And like I said, I haven't seen a statement either. So maybe it's clickbaity. I'm not sure, but man, yeah. That is blown up. And it's one of those kind of decisions where it's like the dive, removal of dive school, where you're like, I don't know. And again, like I always try and give Air Force and military leadership the benefit of the doubt, because I fully acknowledge I'm a they now, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, and there are for sure decisions I have made and will make that people are like, dude, what the fuck's this dude doing? You know, so I get it, which is why I try and give people the benefit of the doubt. But when you see things like this, you're like, I'm trying here. I'm trying to get on your side and give you the benefit of the doubt, but it's tough. And, you know, when you have people like Colonel Nathan R. Jessup that, you know, stand for needing people on the wall and, you know, duty, honor, courage, country, service, and that kind of stuff. You know, we should pay attention to what Colonel Jessup says. Hmm.
Well, yeah, it's weird.
You don't even know who I'm talking about, do you?
I don't. Which one's Jessup?
Oh, man. It's you can't handle the truth.
Oh, no, we don't need more guys like that. To me, when decisions like that are made, though, like sometimes like with the dive thing, I'm like, you don't. and this is me as an enlisted guy that's like way too close to the problem, or spent a lot of my career way too close to that problem. It's like, you don't even know what you're asking. Like you're so far removed from the problem set, and you've never lived in that problem set because you didn't start at the bottom. You have no idea how this works. that you don't even know what you're asking for. Like, it's not the removal of dive that killed me. It was the total lack of understanding of how long it would take and how many things are in place and what it affects and doesn't affect. And like, you're not, also you don't have a beret, and no one with a beret is telling you that this is a great idea. So it's just like, I don't understand, like, making decisions that you don't understand.
No, it's tough. And I hope I get a chance, or we get a chance to ask the question and get a no kidding answer. But when you have spent, better part of, since our inception, right, we've been going to dive school, like, pretty early, you know, when we start talking about some of the legends that we have had on,
yep.
Right, your Mike Lampies, your Corins, you know, who all went to dive school and stuff like that. When you start talking about something that's been a part of our career fields for so long, And I don't mean that it's the sacred cow that we shouldn't get rid of. That's not what I'm saying, right? Because if there's a reason for it and it makes sense, then okay, we should divest from it. But when you start talking about actual operational events, and I don't mean combat. Yes, there have been combat dives and that kind of stuff. But the majority of us that have dove have actually done body recovery.
Yeah,
that is body and equipment recovery, because a lot of folks aren't qualified for that. And you're not going to send out civilian divers, or you're going to try not to send out civilian divers to recover, you know, when we start talking about the CV-22 off of Okinawa.
Yeah,
you know, we start talking about the cave, the Thai cave. Yes, there were civilian divers there. There were also Thai SEALs. There were also PJs, controllers, SR from the 320th that were diving. Like, that a big part of that mission. So we've done it in a humanitarian, we've done it operationally, we've done it in combat, although a few. And then, and our focus has always been in the Middle East recently.
Yeah.
And now everything that you're telling us, everything in the all the way up to POTUS is saying we need to pivot to the Pacific and start focusing on that. And which, last time I checked and looked at a globe, there's a whole lot of water.
That drove the SR dive requirement. Like, the old South T didn't have a dive requirement, right? At least not like out the pipeline. The new, all of the stuff coming from the Pentagon is what drove the SR 100% dive requirement in the pipeline. A few other things, but like, that was the justification, is like, if you're moving into this new theater of operation that's mostly water, like, it's one of those things. And also, like, the Air Force Spec Ops guys have a unique access to everything. Like, mm-hmm. we're like the guys that are always there that are never there. You know what I mean? Like, that you never hear about, but they're always there. So you always have that dive capability, whether it's combat or humanitarian or recovery. It's always there. It's always available, you know, no matter what, whether your ODAs or some of these other teams out there have that capability or not. Like, that's what we are. We're a small maneuver force as well. Like those guys out in Okinawa, like, they can go. Like, it's not deploying like an entire battalion or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, definitely small team, small footprint.
Yeah,
right. And a lot of times they're self-sustaining, but it's just it's a weird thing. So, like I said, I try and give benefit of the doubt to leadership when they make those kind of decisions. But I think you make a good point. They make a lot of these decisions in a vacuum. They also make a lot of those decisions based off of what their staff is telling them, you know, and if their staff, if there's not somebody on there who is a funny hat wearer or somebody who is an expert in said mission set or career field, and I'm not even just talking about dive, I'm talking about anything,
yeah.
Then you don't even bother to pick up the phone and ask. Like, it's problematic.
Yeah. Well, they might say the same thing about me saying we need to get rid of the service academies, right? Which to me,
yeah,
looks like just a sacred cow. Like, that's all it looks like. And a whole bunch of money, not to mention the amount of active duty officers it takes to run the academy. Like, we have people on active duty running a school for reasons. I don't know. And, you know, there's a bunch of enlisted folks out there, too. And I'm not saying there's no goodness that comes out of the academies. I'm just saying it doesn't outweigh the amount of time, resources, and effort. And I think streamlining it, and I do think also, and this is just me, like, it seems way more American to have people come in at the bottom and work their way up. Like this, the class system where you show up as a lieutenant and you know you have no understanding of what it's like to be enlisted. I don't think it's very American, and it's a waste of time.
Very American. Jeez. Well, you mean the start from the bottom, pick yourself up by your bootstraps. You need to fail a couple times, that kind of thing.
Well, if for 4 years these people in college are not serving our country, they're just not. And so, like, we're wasting 18 to 22 year olds' time, sending them to college. Like, and I'm not saying they're not going to do good things later on, but it's just like, what more could we get out of them? What more could they actually learn about the military, about service, about how things operate and run? Just coming straight out of high school or whatever they're doing and joining up as an enlisted person, you know, like that's the type of education that we need. Like, it just doesn't seem very focused on the mission. To send people to college first. Like, let's focus on the mission.
And what about the concept and taking a stepping outside of the military? What about the concept of you go to college, get your bachelor's, you remain, get your master's, and then you turn right around and become a teacher or a professor?
That's a good way to not understand how anything works in this world. Who think you're smart.
And who is more educated? And I use the term, you know, in quotes, educated, right? Somebody who went and did theoretical stuff through and read a lot of books, which reading is extremely important, but, you know, did bachelor's, master's, and now comes back to be a teacher or professor, or the person that has spent that last 4, 6, 8 years traveling the world, integrating with people, and putting themselves in situations that aren't the best or maybe are fantastic, but you're seeing other cultures. Like, that's one of the things that I try and impart on my kids. It's like, dude, you've gotten to see not just different cultures from different countries, but different states too. Like, and you can see the cultural differences between the states, and you've gotten a chance to experience all that. And so many people haven't.
Yeah.
And they don't appreciate the education now, but they will.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to explain to someone that lives in a bubble that they live in a bubble, yeah. You know, and going out there and seeing the reality of the situations, like when, you know, a couple idiots are like, we're going to ride our bike across Afghanistan. And there's good people there. We're like, okay, A, I agree with you that there's a lot of great people in Afghanistan. B, you're dead. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, like they're like, you know, like, and they make all these assumptions, but like when some of these academics will be like, well, you guys must hate a certain, you know, Muslims or whatever it is. And it's like, no. Like, some of the very best people I've met in my life have been like the Afghans or some of the other Middle Eastern folks that I've met and worked with, not to mention, you know, the Europeans and the Africans and all these other people that we've met. But people are people. And there's good people and there's bad people. That's like saying, like I think a lot of the people on the south side of Chicago are probably fantastic people. And if I went there during the day with security and I got to hang out with them, it would be awesome, but I'm not walking through there in the middle of the night and thinking that a few rounds aren't going to come my way. Like, that's just not based in reality.
How much of this divide, though, is just social media and the media actually propping it up?
Yeah, a lot. Yeah. 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 So, but like that's the thing is, like, I don't know, like what, why is there such a divide between like the officers and the enlisted right now? You know? Like, what is the point?
Well, I mean, we already know there is pay wise, right?
Yeah. Well, and don't get me wrong. Like, the legal responsibility on officers is different. And the higher up you go, the easier it is to get fired in theory, and all these other things.
But you think so?
I don't know. Well, see, that's the problem. That's another problem that we have is accountability and being willing to just get rid of people.
So I agree that I think it's real easy to get fired if you're 06 and below.
Okay.
I think that's easy. Like, yeah, you're relieved. Done. We've already seen it. We've seen 06s and 05s get canned, like for seemingly like, what did this person do?
Well, just don't disagree with civilians, okay?
Yeah.
Don't do it.
At the same time, we've also seen chiefs who one has agreed to come on here pretty soon that have been fired for no reason. So 06, E9, easy to fire. You right. start going into the 07 and above, it is more of a resign in lieu of, or
right.
a resign in lieu of getting fired, or, hey, we're just going to let you retire. And because folks that don't know this, when I retire, okay, yeah, I'm a chief. When I retire, I'll be a mister. When an 06 retires, they're going to be a mister. If you're a general officer or a GO, you are always a general officer, always, even after retirement.
Gross.
I see it a lot in Nellis, right? And they have so much power, even after retirement. It's
yeah.
it's wild to see.
Yeah, and I'm not, you know, it's hard, right? Because obviously I've met GOs that I really, really like.
Oh yeah.
Know, and all these other things, but like I guess. You know, I'm here complaining about the officer enlisted thing, but like, I think also at the same time, I would like the reason I want to get rid of E8s and chiefs is I want that delineation of responsibilities to be more clear. And we complain about it all the time. Like enlisted folks don't, if they don't get degrees, like it's fine because their degree isn't what they do. Like when you have that salty E6, E7 that can go out to that plane, that maintenance guy, that knows the checklist, still runs the checklist, you know, can make it as efficient as possible. And it can also train these new folks in the most efficient way possible on how to do it and can like knock those birds out and get them back flying as fast as possible. Like that, what does that have to do with English lit? Nothing.
No, you're exactly right. But I will say enlisted have got to step up their game. If we're going to sit here and we're going to complain about, you know, different officer tiers and that kind of stuff and the pay and all that kind of stuff, that means enlisted have got to get their shit together.
Yeah.
Because for as many as we see that are solid, there are just as many that are complete freaking knuckleheads. And I'll say that about chiefs too. I said it on here, dude. No one hates chiefs more than I do. Right. Chiefs are infuriating. Yeah. And they bug the absolute shit out of me. There's absolutely some good ones out there for sure. In fact, probably most of them are good, but a lot of them are tired.
Mm-hmm.
They are burnt out. They are stuck in their ways. And, or maybe they're acting as gatekeepers. And some people are retired on active duty. And it's like, so that's one of the good things about the indefinite reenlistment. That's huge. That way, if you do decide at some point in your cognizant enough to go, okay, I'm retired on active duty or I'm burnt out, it's time for me to go, that's great. They're no longer stuck. The other part of that, which hasn't been enacted yet, and I don't know if it's public knowledge, but I'm going to say it anyway.
Oh, something no.
that the chief's group is actually working on is, because you know, a chief can just stay in until 30, whether they are retired or retired on active duty or whatever. Like they could be a terrible chief and they are allowed to stay in.
Why?
They're going, well, that's what I'm saying. They're about to do away with it. Good. They're, and I forget what it's called, but I just found out about, they're trying to get it written into policy where a commander can just go like, you know how we have don't retain, do not retain,
mm-hmm.
where they're going to have that for chiefs. So
that's good.
That's what they're trying to push through the AFIs right now. Hopefully it goes because there's plenty of chiefs and they get the hell out and finally retire. Beat it, nerds.
Yeah, well, you know me. I think we have way too many senior NCOs and chiefs and officers. Like, you know, like 06 and above. Like, it just doesn't seem like we need that many. If you're good at what you do, like, and it, don't get me wrong, like where you're at, there's probably not enough of you, right? Of Chief Petrus. where you're currently sitting.
Just the one is too many. I don't know.
But you know what I mean. But like, you know, you go to some places and you're just like, why do we have this many chiefs sitting in one room? I don't understand. So,
we might have the right number at the weapon school, just in the way that there's only one. Like, but we're a group, and all the other squadrons, they're squadrons, and they're small squadrons though, so they're not massive. I think maybe having seniors at them would be nice.
Like, yeah,
and that's what ideally what I would do, because of the impact that they're making in the Air Force and in the joint world. But yeah, I'm the only one right now.
There's two things, right? Like, to me, like the lack of focus on the squadron that I see sometimes from like everything above the squadron is infuriating. Like, the Air Force exists for the squadrons, not for anything else. Like, if you're doing stuff that has nothing to do with the squadrons, or the squadrons don't like it, or you're not communicating with them regularly, which is my gripe about groups, wings, NAFs, all that other stuff that goes all the way up to the match comms before it actually gets down to the squadron, and how much time and coordination it takes to like help a squadron out is a little ridiculous. And on the other side, the second thing was, you know, like the chiefs, your O6s and above, or whoever, like, yeah, you should get privileges as you earn your way up the chain, right? There's definite privileges, but also you should be held to a higher standard and responsibility. And so like that, you know, edge that you're standing on should get a lot thinner, because you've had a lot more practice at it. So like, you should have a good time. You should have a little more, you know, leeway to do what you want to do. But also, if you're not maintaining the standards, if you're not doing the right thing, like your, you know, path to being a mister should be much shorter.
Being a mister
or Mrs.
Yeah, we're not whatever. Discriminating.
Yeah. If you want to be a plural, that's fine. It's not. It's made up.
That one sentence right there.
I didn't even say the actual words, though. I didn't.
No, that's true. Anyway, you got anything else on that?
I don't think so. I'm looking forward to the feedback. Most of the time when I come on here and I want to fix the IFT or I want to fix ANS, it's a little tongue-in-cheek, right? And this is me fixing the Air Force. And part of this is I would like to get feedback for my own edification, right? Like, maybe I don't understand the service academies. Maybe the investment is worth it. Well, it's not. But there's probably a lot of goodness that I'm just not tracking. But yeah, I want to start a conversation.
No, I think it'd be good. Yeah, and you're right. After that last fixing the IFT, that got a lot of feedback. A lot of feedback, and not just feedback from, you know, potential recruits or people in the pipeline and stuff like that, but current team dudes were pretty active responding to that, which is good, because it's good feedback.
I got some really fun text messages after
I
that
bet
one.
You did.
Yeah. So that's what I'm here for. But like, if we're not trying to make things better, what are we doing?
Honestly, 100% agree. We're supposed to, and that's why. And that's one of the problems with chiefs, is they get stuck in their own ways. They really do, because they've seen all the change. So one is they have change fatigue, because they've seen the Air Force change so much. And by the time they become a chief, they are just like, oh God, change again. No, we're not changing. This is how we're doing it. This is the way we've always done it. We're not changing. You know, the other ones are stuck in their ways. Like, to give you an example, if I were to go be a command chief, I have to go do a tier one command chief gig, which is a small wing, right? The 57th wing on Nellis and the 99th wing on Nellis is, because Nellis has two wings, is a tier two. So I couldn't, even though I know Nellis and I know the 57th wing inside and out and all the organizations and I know all the people, I cannot, because the chief's group says I cannot just go from where I'm at now up to the wing. Even if that commander wanted to hire me, they would not allow it. They would say, nope, you need to go to a different base. You need to go to a small wing, and then you can apply to come back, because I need to check the box.
That's so dumb. Because you haven't chiefed. You haven't chiefed at this level yet.
Yeah, like, really?
What, huh?
You're right. So give me 90 days and I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
You telling me that something that a command chief at a tier two or a tier three. I'm sure at a tier three, at a Magicom level, that's a whole nother animal. Like, I'll no way am I trying to do that. But you're trying to tell me that I couldn't jump right into a wing that I'm already a part of?
Correct.
Like, come on.
You're a terrible chief.
I know it. You heard it here first. OneDready.com. Pick up some Attack Elite gear. Prepare for the pipeline accordingly. The discount is already built in, so you don't have to worry about it. And while you're there, pick up some of our merch, shirts, flags, all that kind of good stuff. We got some new stuff on there. And then we just, well, that's not showing up. We just did a refresh on this.
Black. Zero you're like blue. Invisible.
Yeah, it's really, the light's not showing up. Anyway, we got hats and all that kind of good stuff. And then again, Attack Elite gear, check them out. 18 Alpha Fitness. Promo code the number one ready. Get yourself a training plan that is tailored directly to you. Get yourself ready. And we're out here.
Live. All right. Bye, everybody.